What up, bros?
What up, bros?
And welcome to Bruh Meets World.
When it's Bruh Meets World. Or maybe should I say Bruh Meets the Spider-Verse?
Spider-Verse. This is an extra credit episode. I'm Siege.
And I am Tony Curtis.
And to join us today for our very extra special episode about Across the Universe, the 2023 sequel to the 2018 Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. You loved him. He is a longtime brumate of the show.
I like that. Brumate. We need to start using that more. Let's get that on merchandise.
Welcome back, Chris Lord.
Thank you for having me. I'm an honored brumate and very honored happy brumate. To be here. So.
Yes. And she had a guest spot during our Be True episode. Welcome back, Amber, aka Sailor Ignite.
Hey.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. Honestly, T and I watched, like, I saw it first and I was like, we have to do this episode.
I've seen this movie 3 times. I'm into it. Like, I know there's some hot takes around the table, but I'm into this movie and I'm ready to talk about it.
Yeah, all right. So to say that, first of all, to let all of our listeners know, this will be a spoiler-filled review. You guys know T, there is no way we'll be able to talk about this movie and not hint at things that are in it. So if you haven't seen the movie, please go check it out. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. If we see you 2 hours and 20 minutes from now, welcome back. So I'm so excited to talk about this movie. But first, as always, we would love to get our guests' first impressions. I need to know, both of you, how did you feel about this movie? How did you feel getting back into the Spider-Verse?
I love Miles. I have loved Miles since, like, they said that there was going to be a Black Spider-Man. I was like, I'm here for it. And then they're like, I was like, here for it. So I was definitely excited. I think that Sony has done a really good job with the Spider-Man's franchise. So I was definitely just excited. I think I love the movie. I came out of it and I was like, this is a great Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, I also loved it. Had a great time. Like, just huge, big, stupid grin on my face, like, all the way through the movie, especially all the parts in the, like, the Spider Clubhouse. I don't know what the official name for it is, but just, like, all the appearances.
That's what it's called. Official name.
Yeah.
That's what we're calling it.
We'll get into, like, maybe more nuanced conversations towards the end. I will say I walked out, though, not very satisfied with the ending. On a second viewing, it upset me less.
But we'll talk about that. Yeah, I had this discussion, and I'm down to defend my point of view, but go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, I knew when they announced that it was a two-parter, and so I was like, I could kind of see where it was going as it was getting there. But that being said, like, it's a masterpiece. I mean, the first one is, I think, arguably, well, definitely the best Spider-Man movie. If someone told me it's the best superhero movie ever made, I'd be like, you know what? I have time for that conversation. I think it's a very valid point. And I think this was a very worthy successor to that.
You know, I've seen it 3 times. And I had to see it more than once because the first time I was just left speechless, like, truly just like speechless in awe. I had like post-orgasm shudders, like, don't touch me. It just I was so like overstimulated in all the best ways. And just really just in awe of, like, this is why I think this movie is truly making like such a cultural impact and like kind of going beyond what animated movies are thought of, is because to me it really just showcased how creative we are as a people, as a humanity. Like, if aliens were to come down and try to destroy Earth, I would send this up hoping that they would show pity on us, seeing how creative we can be. And like, that was just like a moment that I didn't expect to have, that I'm just like still just in awe of.
This particular movie, the one that ends the way that it does,
that is
you
true.
Would send up. Okay.
Leave them wanting more. They can't kill us if they were waiting for a sequel.
You know what? You're right. Like, I can see one. Aliens being like, you know, we would destroy, but we got to wait till March 2024. We need to see how this comes out.
Oh, they're going to push it to summer, I think. But
okay. Oh, yeah. I've already heard that.
Siege, what was your initial impression when you saw it?
I love that you asked that. I was like, they did it again. Like, that was my first thought. Like, I literally just sat there being like, they did it again. Anyone who knows anything about sequels, especially in Hollywood, sometimes you're like, this is a cash grab, or how much thought could you have really put into this? It's been 5 years since the last one. So there's a lot of pressure on this one to be good. And then I watched it being like, you did it. I like just wanted to stand up and applaud everyone involved, because I was like, you actually did it. You made me care about the characters. You made me care about the story. And I actually feel like everything fits. Everything feels cohesive. Everything feels thought out. But it also works as a standalone film, you know? I do want to go into this movie a little bit and kind of like talk about the things that we loved, because there is so much to this movie. T, you are Afro-Latino. I feel like this absolutely hits and nails. Amber, you're not limited to, but this has, like, it starts off with a female storyline, so I definitely want to hear your thoughts of it. And then, Lawrence, you are the nerd guy. Like, you have so many info. So I just want to hear, I'm going to sit back for a little bit and, like, just listen to you guys. Tell me what you loved about the movie.
Childish Gambino came in and I screamed.
Yes.
The most meta.
I saw him and I was trying so hard. I literally audibly gasped. I was like, oh my God.
For those of you who don't know, Donald Glover is actually the inspiration for Miles Morales. Like, it was one of those like domino effect situations where he wore a t-shirt on the show Community with like a Spider-Man. The audience went crazy being like, he would make a great Spider-Man.
Well, actually, the online campaign started before that episode, and that episode was him kind of throwing his hat and saying like, yeah, I'm also expressing interest.
God, I love that.
Absolutely.
So everyone said, no, he's black, he can't. He actually talks about it in a stand-up special. It's really funny. Yeah.
So they said that maybe this new Spider-Man, since they're making it so, you know, quickly after making these other Spider-Mans, maybe they should make it real different, you know, make it kind of like dark and edgy, like The Dark Knight, and put it in modern day times and stuff. And maybe, you know, Spider-Man, maybe he doesn't have to be white. Maybe he can be black or Hispanic or something like that. And then somebody put a big picture of me in the comments. It was like, Donald Glover can play Spider-Man. He's nerdy. And I was like, okay. And somebody sent that to me. So I was like, oh yeah, I'll put that up. So I put it up on my Twitter and I was like, oh, Donald for Spider-Man, let's do this. You know, kind of joke, but also like, who doesn't want to be Spider-Man? That'd be cool. And that's when the world went crazy. And half the world was like, Donald for Spider-Man. We're only gonna watch the next Spider-Man of Donald Glover's playing Peter Parker. And the other half was like, he's black, kill him! Like, it was so fast. It was so fast.
So it's really funny. Yeah.
They said he's black, he can't. So they were like, all right, we'll just create a new one. And they created Miles Morales. And like, he's kind of always been in, I believe it's...
he's in Spider-Man Homecoming. Yeah.
Spider-Man Homecoming, yeah. He makes an appearance as Uncle Aaron, as the Prowler. So to see him come back again is like, it's meta on meta. It's fantastic. And yeah.
Do you want to dive a little deeper into that meta web?
Go for it.
Because, spoilers. So yes, he is the internet crowned him the Stan Lee of Miles Morales, which I just love. So he plays the Prowler, which he initially was supposed to play Spider-Man, but they said, no, you can't do it. Took that away from him, gave that spider to someone else. Hint, hint. In this movie, there is a boy who is supposed to be Miles Morales, Spider-Man, but that spider was taken away and he becomes the Prowler. So just mirrored stories inside and
okay,
out.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
All the other cameos, when they put Spectacular Spider-Man in there, the Tobey Maguire, there's Andrew Garfield, the like allusion to the like original comics, that like the meme pointing, of course.
Yes.
So I really loved all that. It was a really fun movie to watch. I also really enjoyed all the different animation styles. It looked so beautiful, and you wonder how they're going to make all of these different animations work and fit in this like set animation style. And it all worked out really well. It all looked beautiful. Even when they added the live action people in there, it looked great.
Yeah, which isn't always done well. Like, we always think like, okay, like Roger Rabbit, best example of live action animation. And it's like, not often you get mostly animation with a little bit of live action, and it could have been distracting, and it really wasn't. I thought they did a really like great job interweaving that through and making it just feel totally organic. Like, it doesn't seem weird that Miles is talking to Donald Glover. It's just like, oh no, this totally works. It doesn't feel odd at all. The opening already introduced us to so many different animation styles. Like, right from the beginning, you know, it's mostly Gwen's story, and Gwen's universe is just beautiful. Like, so beautiful. It's like a watercolor, and it's just like constantly changing in reaction to her emotions. And
I believe the creator said that they wanted it to act like a mood ring universe. Yes. Like, it's watercolor mood ring. And it looks amazing. On the second viewing, you can totally see that. Like, no matter how she's feeling or how any character who's in the shot is feeling, there's like a complete color scheme that kind of reflects that. I'm so sorry. I just wanted to throw that
out. No. And this is a good way of putting in the mood ring thing. And like, I love that her world in particular, like, wasn't, I don't know, like, bound by any sort of like conventional animation style. Definitely. Like, it practically doesn't, there's no reason for it to constantly changing, like in a sense of like the world itself, but you don't care because it's just so beautiful and it feels so organic to her and her character. And then, you know, right from the beginning, we get her, and then we get like the Da Vinci era vulture, which is just like such a weird and wild concept. And again, the mashing of the animation. And then you get that whole sequence and like that really heartbreaking moment with her and her dad. And then like the title card pops up, like, holy shit, this was just the cold open. Like, this is just this insane, like, little mini story just in the cold open. And the pace of these movies, last one and this one, is just relentless, but it never feels exhausting. It just carries you along all the way through. You have such an emotional connection to everyone in it. All the relationships feel so real and so grounded. And even like the Spot, like, he's...
I can't wait to talk about him. Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, it's like, that's almost become like a trope in of itself, like the sympathetic villain, but you kind of get where he's coming from, and especially making him seem so like hapless and useless initially. And Jason Schwartzman is just a perfect voice for him. And it's just like every little piece was so clearly well thought out. And I think we're at a point now where that's often not the case. And I think it's a totally valid criticism of like the MCU of late too, just like doesn't feel like it's necessarily thought through. And every single tiny little piece of this is so meticulously thought through, and it's just this beautiful, fun, funny, heartwarming, heartbreaking roller coaster all the way through. And just so few movies deliver on that, and for also to be animation just makes me that much happier, because people need to respect animation more.
Absolutely. I think for those of you who don't know, Chris was actually on our Into the Spider-Verse recap, which was really funny. And so I listened to that again just to compare. And we talked about how Into the Spider-Verse really kind of set the tone of being like, oh, wait, no, you should respect animation. And yes. I feel like that's what the entire, so far it's only been two, but we know there'll be three. The Spider-Verse trilogy Miles Morales will be about. It's really like the respect for animation of all kinds, like, you know, like whether it's hand-drawn, digital, Lego, like there are so many versions of animation that are just valued and given their flowers.
I think one thing that's real that keeps popping up is like when you're talking about how long it is and like story building in the MCU, it was where it like made up for everything that was wrong with Eternals. Like, Eternals was this really long story that was really drawn out, trying to build these worlds and try to convince me that these heroes are right for 2 hours, and I still wasn't convinced. Yeah. And then this one, I was like, I see why Miles wants to mess things up. I'll let him do it. I want to see him do it.
You know, I love that you pointed out the kind of trilogy aspect of it too, like the length of these series. It's rare that we just get a traditional trilogy now with like a beginning, middle, and end thought out from completion. I mean, I feel like there's something that's missing in common movie franchises when you just know that like there's not really any high stakes because you know they're going to be back in the next year's movie. Whereas this, it just feels very organic that like it's going to come to an end. And I'm excited to see that ending versus feeling like it's going to be stretched out for years and years. And the fact that they thought ahead of time that they're planting Easter eggs in the first movie for the second movie and probably for the third movie shows that they have much more foresight than MCU that's retroactively going back and adding stuff in to make things make sense.
Absolutely. Chris, you brought up the cold open. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so fantastic because A, it starts with Gwen, and she says, let's do things a little bit differently this time. And, like, not only do we get kind of, like, her world and how things are, we understand that she's alone and isolated, which we will later learn is echoed with Miles being alone and isolated, which gives you motivation as an audience to see all of these spider people come together. But also what I love is this repeating motif of, she tells the stories of Miles, not her story, she tells Miles' story, and she goes, and he's not the only one. And, like, they're just constantly bringing up, and he's not the only one, which to me is so fantastic for her to enter with, because at the end, when Miles is alone and by himself, you remember that he's not the only one. There is an entire band of spider people who are on his side, who are coming looking for him. So to open up with he's not the only one is, like, a very great bit of foreshadowing that, again, I this movie is fantastic with foreshadowing.
Oh, I just wanted to touch on that a little bit, because this is my theory. This is my theory based off of watching this, okay? Mm-hmm. So this whole movie is kind of about Miles choosing to live his life on his own terms. Like, he says to his guidance, the guidance counselor says, you can't have your cake and eat it too. And he's like, well, you can if you have two cakes. And then Gwen's like, well, there's no universe in which Spider-Man and Gwen end up together. And he was like, well, there's a first time for everything. And so when Miguel, like, questions, like, hey, you can't do two things, I think that, hey, if I have two cakes thing, is going to come back to play, because I think what we're going to find out is that Spider-Man can do these things if he has more Spider-Man, if he can bring another cake with him. He even goes as far as to tell his mom before he leaves, hey, I'm coming back with a cake. So I think there's something to that cake metaphor that's going to come back to play in terms of him being that part of that unit, that team, that community.
TC, you just made me realize something. He says, you can if you have two cakes. How does the movie end? 2 miles.
Look at that. Look at that. So fantastic. You guys have, like, I just want to give our listeners, again, you should have watched it by now. I'm going to give a really quick rundown, roll call, if you will, of the people who are playing, so there's some identity of, like, who we're talking about. You get Shameik Moore as Miles Morales, Haley Steinfeld as Gwen Stacy, Brian Tyree Henry as Jeff Morales, Luna Lauren Velez as Rio Morales, Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker, Oscar Isaac as Miguel O'Hara, Jason Schwartzman as Spot, which I can't wait to talk about Spot, Issa Rae as Jessica Drew, and Greta Lee as Lila. There are so many more spider people that I can't list everyone, but I just wanted to, like, list the main cast. And what did you guys think about the casting of this episode? Or this movie?
It's nuts. Like, as you're going through that list, you're just like, every person is just as good, not better than the last. And, you know, some of them have, I'd say the nice thing about this, like, I felt like everyone got something to do. Like, just from an acting perspective, everyone got a little bit of something to work with. But yeah, just like, what a ridiculously deep bench of people to come in and do voice acting. Like, I have a lot of love for what we'll call, like, traditional voice actors who have kind of faded out as celebrity voice acting has become such a huge thing in the last 30 years. But then you look at something like this, and you're like, oh, but everyone here is just giving it their all, and you understand why everyone here was cast. And they're so perfectly cast down to every single person.
And I wanted to ask you, Amber, get Haley Steinfeld and Issa Rae as both Spider Women. Yeah. How did you feel? Like, I mean, like, Issa alone, I'm gonna be quiet and let you talk.
Issa is my Capricorn sister. I remember in college, she was supposed to come to my university, and that's as soon as Insecure took off, so she had overbooked herself. And I just, ever since then, I've, like, known of who she is, and I just love her so much. I was really wondering what she was gonna do and how she was gonna do this voice. And she has, like, such a great voice anyway. I knew she was gonna be fantastic, but her is Jessica Drew, and just the way she talks was just so amazing. Like, I was like, this is a Black woman. This is a pregnant Black woman who's here and taking care of business. Haley, it was so good. I didn't even really realize that was her until after I got done with the, like, went back and watched some interviews in the movie. And she was so good. Even with, like, recognizable voices, I was just like, oh, these people are these characters. These are not real human beings that I have seen on TV before.
See, what did you think about like the let's say the voice actors and like the storylines that, again, like you are Afro-Latina, and I wanted to make sure that we kind of identify that, because the whole story of Miles Morales, a lot of people were like, oh, we got a Black Spider-Man. And I have been very mindful specifically because of you. Like, no, he is not just a Black Spider-Man. He is an Afro-Latino Spider-Man, which is so important.
Well, you know, okay, so there's a few things about that. First of all, I just want to say that, like, I feel like the reason why this movie works is because it's a movie about family. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like this is actually a theme of a lot of major important blockbusters that have ever come out. I mean, Jaws is about a family. Like, E.T. is about a family. Terminator 2 is really just a mother-son story. Like, there's so many examples of just family being at the heart of these movies where it just really works. And this is an example of that. I thought it was really interesting that the whole center conflict was about Miles being this original anomaly, because as a mixed kid, you often feel like an anomaly. You often feel like you don't belong anywhere. And so, you know, to see that kind of echoed through the meta commentary of, you know, they're talking about how Miles is rejected because he is this kind of Black or Afro-Latino Spider-Man in general. But I think there is some commentary about what it means to be that kind of mixed in both worlds and not really knowing what group you belong to and feeling less in every category. So I just thought that was really interesting. There's also just some really interesting, like, little fun facts about this, whereas, like, for example, at the party for his dad that they're having, they're serving pasteles, which is a traditional Puerto Rican dish, which my family goes crazy over. It's like our Christmas dish that we make every year. In the movie, his mom says, oh, I hear that Spider-Man is Puerto Rican. He goes, no, I heard he's Dominican. Which, fun fact about that, is that the voice of the man, the guy who does the alternative Miles, is Dominican. So it's kind of playing into that commentary as well. So yeah, just a lot of fun, interesting tidbits in there.
That's so funny. Like, it's great to see that kind of representation. It, like, not only representation in, like, terms of voice acting or the character itself, but, like, this movie is so good at representing and knowing the world in which this character lives. Like, visually, there's that, a lot of people pointed out, when his mother snaps her fingers, it, like, shows a little Puerto Rican flag, like, as a sound effect, and you're like, oh, that's so amazing. But then also, I don't know if anyone else caught this, but there's just a scene where Miles is in his guidance counselor's office, and his mother just looks at him, so he sits up straight, and his father looks at him again, and he sits up straighter, and you're like, yeah, that is, those are Black parents. Those are, sorry, Black and Hispanic parents, where they're like, excuse you, are you not in front of company? You know, like, and there's, like, so many, like, small details like that that felt, that to me allowed people to feel seen in different ways.
And that scene, he's also wearing a Black Lives Matter pin as well, if you look at his backpack. So,
which made me sad a little bit, because that means that all of the things that
in every universe, there's white supremacy to battle, guys. Yeah. You can't escape it. It's the original Thanos.
The original is a great way of putting that. I want to talk about Spot a little bit, because Spot is introduced in this movie as the antagonist. And as Chris had pointed out earlier, he kind of has like a sympathetic backstory a little bit. We meet him, he's like this bumbling fool of a crime fighter. He even said, look, I can't get a job, so I turned to crime. And I thought that was like so funny and so realistic. When he says that he created Miles and Miles created him, a lot of his story arc really comes off from the fact that Miles is like, oh, you're like a villain of the week. And he's like, oh, really? And you know, like that insult to ego is enough to like just spark this entire thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think to TC's point about like the meta-ness of it all, like the Spot is kind of a villain of the week villain. Like my Spider-Man knowledge is not as robust as like my Batman knowledge. Like I did recently rewatch the whole Spider-Man animated series. It's like people know like the big names in terms of Spider-Man films, right? Like the various goblins, Green Goblin, Hobgoblin, Doc Ock, Vulture. Like honestly, that first Spider-Verse movie has just like a huge roster of villains, even in small roles. Mm-hmm. And this has a version of the Vulture, and then the Spot. And like even in the animated series, the Spot was in, I'm pretty sure he was in one episode, like very much kind of like a kind of throwaway character. But he makes so much sense for this, given that it's all about, you know, universe jumping, that he'd be the center of all of it. And the fact that he starts out just so, he's just goofy. Like he's just like this weird, he's got this like weird kind of like doughy shape, and like he leans against a shelf and like bread starts spilling out of him. Like no one takes him seriously, and Miles in particular. And his arc of like being like, oh, like you're gonna take me seriously, that's kind of feel like the way that we're looking at him as a character as well. Like Miles had to take him seriously, and we're having to take him seriously. Like, oh, like he really could just fuck everything up if he wanted to. He just didn't realize he had the potential, and he's discovering that in himself. And it does kind of parallel Miles too, also like discovering his own potential. It's sort of like dark reflection in a lot of ways. And great, great character.
I love that he is so petty. He was like, oh, oh, you're not taking me seriously? I bet. Like, I'm gonna show you.
One of the worst things you can do in life is insult a white man's ego. Like that in itself,
absolutely true.
It absolutely allowed it. It led to so much destruction. Why? Because you didn't take this white angry man seriously. And that, like, there was so much in this movie where I was like, oh, actually, I feel that that's right. Like, there's so many like subtle jokes that they give for the Spot. Like when we get to Spider-Man India, and he's just like, oh, let me guess, you're eat, pray, loving. It's like this whole thing of like just whiteness in this very diverse space that actually makes sense. Like the idea of the Spot even going to a bodega to steal their ATM, and then being like, hey, like I'm not really the bad guy, it's the banks that you should be worried about. I was like, this is such a white man in a diverse area that I loved it. And I just was able to see it for like the kind of fun the movie was having with it.
What I love about the Spot and is that they really set him up to actually be Miles's arch nemesis. You know, one of the conversations we always have is that like the reason why Batman and Joker are such great arch nemesis is because they're the same but different. They're the exact same but they're different. And with Miles and the Spot, you have two characters that both of which were underestimated when they got started. Miles was just as underestimated as the Spot was. Miles was just as bumbling, just as awkward as the Spot was. And so we see them kind of having these mirrored experiences of trying to prove themselves, of trying to prove validation. And as they seek to prove themselves more and more, they're coming closer and closer to their final battle with each other.
Absolutely. I absolutely love kind of like the mirroring and like the evolution of the Spot. Like even from like an animated source, from I thought his animation style was so intriguing in like this 3D world for him to be like almost a sketch was literally like almost the polar opposite. Like if we're going 3D or even 4D in some cases, he is like 2D. Like to like you know what I mean? And to see his evolution and his design style evolve and become like this really crazy swirling ink blot.
There's a moment where he touches the black matter for the first time, where he starts to kind of hover. And then for a quick glimpse, he's the same image that Miles drew in Into the Spider-Verse and the no reflections on the wall, that kind of figure that's standing there. He's that image reflected.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
Gotta watch it again, guys. I'm telling you, it's all there.
Absolutely. What are some more things that you guys loved about? Like, I feel like I can go on. We've talked about this idea of Miles. Counselor says this is a story about Miles writing his own story. Every person is a universe, and this is about Miles defining who he is going to be and what kind of story he's going to tell. I find that whole scene important because it also kind of foreshadows so much of like what Miles will be going through. This idea of like this and the speech that his mother Rio has with him are so much foreshadowing, where Rio's like, you're going to meet a bunch of people and they're going to tell you you don't belong, but I need you to just remember that you are loved, that you have people behind you. And then she goes, and just don't get lost. And so the fact that this movie ends with him lost And having been told that he doesn't belong, he's an anomaly, he shouldn't be here, I was just like, oh my God, this movie is just fantastic.
Her speech, I was paying particular attention to on the second viewing, especially when she says, like, you know, don't let anyone tell you don't belong. And then I was listening very closely, and like, Miguel actually says the words, you don't belong.
Yeah.
And it's just, the character dynamic there is so good. Like, his relationship with his parents, like, actually is really kind of the heart of the movie. Like, as much as it's about him, like, reconnecting with all the other spider people, particularly Gwen, it's really about his family, to TC's point. And, like, knowing that clue the next movie is also being hugely about that, especially him trying to, like, save his dad. It just, it's so just emotional. It's so touching.
By the way, that counselor's name is Mrs. Weber, which I thought was really funny.
Oh, my God.
And not only is it Mrs. Weber, but she says once, like, you know, they're telling the story and Miles is like, this is who I am. And there's that big moment. She goes, that's your story. Now stick to the script is what she says. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so funny because, again, for anyone who's watched the movie, the entire thing is about Miles not being able to just stick to the predetermined script for all spider people, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually the overarching theme probably of the series, is him defining his life on his own terms. Because in the original, he was assigned that great expectations and he responded with no expectations. And then this one starts with the guidance counselor being, no, you have to write the story of your life. Who are you? And so when Miguel's like, who are you? And he's like, my name is Miles Morales. I was bitten by a radioactive spider. He's actively choosing to write his story as Spider-Man in that moment.
CJ, to your point, like, I want to talk a little bit about the canon event idea here, which I think it's so brilliant. And especially, like, you know, so much of, you know, my job, because I am a podcast producer, like, I do this every day and I cover fandom stuff. So I was lucky enough to get to see this a little bit early. And like, we had a whole episode about this movie, and that is, like, actually a huge part of my job in a weird way, is like making sure that, like, we are accurate as best as we possibly can to, like, everything's being told. Cause, like, this is really important to people. People have a lot of investment in these stories and want to make sure that they're being discussed, you know, with accuracy. And so to have the whole movie be about how, like, the dark side of a canon, kind of, and how, like, yes, it's important, but also, like, does it force you to have to go down certain paths you don't want to go down? And it almost felt like kind of a commentary on where we are in terms of fandom culture too, that, like, we're so obsessed with the exact specific things. We're so obsessed with the idea of, like, oh, it has to be this way because it's always been this way. And Miles is going, but why? Does it actually have to be this way? What happens if we just don't do that? And everyone's telling him that everything will get destroyed, but, like, we actually don't know if that's true or not. And he's going off his gut, what he feels like is the right thing to do. And even, what was it? Oh, Gwen says that too. Like, my gut says this is wrong. And then Jessica's like, well, then go with your head. And it's just that dichotomy there is so interesting, and I love that they built a whole narrative around, isn't canon kind of fucked up?
I was not sold on the idea of, like, these canon events, especially in a world where, I mean, in the world that the MCU is building, where it's like Loki and the TVA exists. I'm just like, whatever happens will happen, y'all will be okay, the TVA will fix it, if whatever. I know they don't know about the TVA, but the TVA will fix it, just do whatever.
Yeah, like, it's so funny that you say that, because I watched the movie the second time with my husband, and he came out and we were both like, what they're doing with the canon is so interesting and important, because it'll either be one of two ways. Either Miles in the next movie will learn, he will do things differently and try to fight it. And at the end, the lesson is, as much as you try to fight it, certain canon events have to happen. Or because Miles is the anomaly, which they keep saying, Miles' story will be different. Because the mere fact that he's the anomaly means that what worked for all of you will not work for him.
You're really getting at, and what makes this movie so profound in so many ways is that, yeah, it's so, like, meta and has all these inside jokes and all of these characters, But it really kind of is a story about fate versus free will and like mm-hmm. this kind of like very human journey that we're all on to kind of like figure out, do we do what's expected of us or do we break out of that mold? So like it's a very specific story, but in that specificity, it's like also very universal as well.
I do want to ask, Amber, you had mentioned earlier, what are your critiques about this movie? What do you guys think kind of... This movie it's good, but could be better.
It was too damn long. Like, and I say this in a way where there's nothing that I would take out. There's nothing that I feel like could have been shorter. I feel mm-hmm. like all of it was very necessary, but it was just so long. I was sitting in the theater and I looked at my watch and I saw it had already been 2 hours. And I like was seeing, okay, so this is where they're gonna end it. This is, you know, there's gonna be a part three. But I was just like, I don't know that I can sit through this again. And then also there's another critique is just that there are like these little phrases and caption things like comic strips that come the editor's into the movie.
The pop-up, and there's,
yeah. so short that I couldn't read them. Yeah. And I found myself being, I'm so used to streaming. I was like, I want to pause this and read it. But I mean, I get that it was short for, you know, whatever reasons. It wasn't like that integral to the story, but I wanted to read them and know what it said. So those are my only critiques, really.
It's funny, I had spoken to Lordy about this before. I was like, the thing that I like about this movie, which kind of addresses what you're talking about, is this movie was made for modern television watching or movie watching. It is made to be visited over and over again. It is made to be paused. It is made to be watched at 0.25 speed. This movie has, it's so layered and it's so much going on. Like with other movies and older movies, we'll say things like, oh, well, this wasn't made to be dissected screen for screen, frame for frame. This movie is. This movie gives you everything that it's ever thought to put inside one frame so that when you revisit it 10 years from now, you'll still discover something new.
Chris, I heard you mention that you had issues with the ending of the movie.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So what I want to say, I totally agree with you, CJ. Like this was meant to be revisited. And like, I think in the best way possible is because it's so layered. And I think you really do gain more every time you go back and rewatch it. I'm sure TC, you have a lot to say on that, having seen it 3 times, most of any of us. Like it does really, there's an additive experience every time you kind of go back. And I am looking forward to watching it again at some point. I think for me, could feel it was heading towards a non-ending. And I could see that coming. And I know, you know, CJ, you know, I've talked about this kind of off air. And I know, I agree with you that like the movie is kind of like structured around Gwen's overall arc. And I think there is something there. But when I think about, you know, movies that are a two-parter that end on a finale. You know, I always think of like Lord of the Rings, I don't know as well, but then like Empire Strikes Back and especially Back to the Future. Like I love the Back to the Future trilogy. I think it's one of the greatest trilogies ever made. I think it like just totally works as an entire piece. And what I think about that movie and Empire, for me, they have a definitive third act and they basically resolve the main questions of that exact film, but then they leave something more to be resolved later on. Like at the end of the Back to the Future 2, Marty burns the almanac and like the whole plot, the whole story there is resolved, but then Doc gets sent to the past and we have to go back and save him, right? You know, an Empire, like the rebels are able to escape from Vader with the exception of, you know, Han, with going to save him now. And with this, I know that they kind of resolve Gwen's story of where it started, but for me, like the big questions it was asking ultimately still are about Miles and what's going to happen with his dad. And it did feel like it didn't really have a third act. It had like a really long second act. And then kind of like that second act, you know, had the big climax moment with the chase away from the Spider Club. And it's all amazing. I love that whole sequence. And then, and Amber, like maybe this is why you're starting to kind of like feel like the length of it too, is like, it felt really long, but then it just sort of like abruptly ended. And I found that dissatisfying walking out. I think maybe because we're at the point now where like storytelling is so serialized that I really appreciate something that's really succinct. And like I said, for me, Into the Spider-Verse, I think is a perfect film. There's literally nothing you could change about that movie. And it has the emotional payoff. And I didn't necessarily get that on this, particularly because of Miles' story. So the first time I saw it, I was disappointed and a little bit frustrated. I had come to terms with my disappointment and frustration on the second viewing, and I was a little more accepting of it. But I know I'm not alone in my frustrations on that. So
before I respond, anyone else have something to say?
No, I understand where Siege is coming from, because the movie does start with Gwen talking about how she wants to be a part of the band, and it ends with her having found a band to be a part of. She created a new band. She created her own. And so there is that. You know, I walked into this movie having heard a interview with Lord and Miller, who they left me with the impression that these movies were like, the first movie is act one, the second movie is act two, and the third movie is act three. And so when I watched the entire movie as a second act of a three act structure, to me, that really worked. To me, I was like, yes, if this was all one big story, this is exactly where the second act would end to begin the third act of the final showdown. So that's why I felt like maybe it didn't bother me as much, because I had those expectations walking in.
Like a big intermission card would like to show up.
I think I agree, because I was a little disappointed. Like, I don't mind a cliffhanger, but that's such a huge cliffhanger that it's like, I don't know. I don't really know what to do with it anymore. Nothing feels resolved. Even Gwen's storyline didn't feel fully resolved to me.
I can't wait to get it. All right. So now I can jump in. I will say that, like, as I said earlier, when Chris and I had this conversation, the movie opens up with Gwen and it says, we're going to do things a little bit differently this time. So to me, when you realize that it opens up with her and her kind of search for a band, for a group of friends, because she's like, I haven't made any other friends other than Miles. And then it also opens up with her not being able to talk to her dad, and like this kind of gulf between her and her father. For them to end with not only her father having quit, which in a way gets around the kind of captain narrative, I was like, A, fantastic way to do that. Mm-hmm. B, we get closure from her and her father, and then her father helps her a little bit, which is also fantastic. And then, as T pointed out, we end with her having made a band of her own. This is actually a movie about Gwen and Miles, and the fact that we open with Gwen and we end with Gwen, in a way. Also, remember that the movie starts Miles' story like 20, 30 minutes in. So it's kind of always been like, and his ending will come later, because we started with her, and this is like really about giving her story closure, but his was always going to be delayed, because it, in fact, was delayed in this movie itself.
And I agree with you. I think you were absolutely right in terms of how it handles Gwen. And TC, I agree. Like, it does feel like the second act of a story. I think there have been more graceful examples in cinema history of how to do like a second act that feels a little bit more singular and closed off. But it's still fucking amazing. So
can I ask a question?
Go for it. Give it to us.
Okay. So we know it's Pride Month and they released it during Pride Month. And we already talked about Gwen's like changing colors of the background. There were like bisexual and like queer colors in her background.
Absolutely.
And people are saying that Gwen is trans. I don't know if I'm fully sold.
She had to protect the trans kids post.
I was gonna say that. When I watched it again, I noticed that.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm fully sold on her being trans, but I am fully sold on the fact that this was like, they were like, we're gonna release this during Pride Month. This is like this is for the gays.
You know what, to vouch for that, it's really interesting. I feel like they did have this month in mind for release, because Miles has a Juneteenth poster up in his room as well. So it just feels like they were very aware of what was going to be happening during this release month.
Amber, I'm so glad you brought this up. I had it in my notes, actually. I want to talk about this specific thing. And I was reading an article before we all hopped on about this, because like, I'm like, it's fully in my head canon that she's trans. Like, I was looking up like kind of what people's like evidence basically is, and on top of like the color palette being lots of bisexual colors, but also lots of trans colors, so light pink, light blue, and white. She has the Protect Trans Kids poster, but then one of the ones I saw that was really interesting was that her dad has a trans flag on his uniform, which it's a really big deal that like a cop would have a trans flag on his uniform. And again, sadly, apparently, just like horrendous bigotry and prejudice exists in all universes. It's fucked up. Can we have a good one? But I thought that was interesting. And like, if anything, that to me was like the biggest clue that like maybe that was the filmmaker's intent, like that he's wearing that, like it's a very, very clear sign. I guess what I'm curious about for everyone is like, how do you think the film should address this? Like, should the producers come out and say like, yes, this is what we intended? Should they say nothing and just let this character exist and not have the fact that she's trans be a defining thing about the character? Like, I don't know what's the best way to like make this seem satisfactory if we're trying to get like an answer to the question. I'm curious what you guys think about that.
When you look at Gwen's storyline, you're like, I could see mm-hmm. this being a trans allegory. Like someone who, like she's constantly telling her father, I don't know if I can show my true self to you without disappointing you. Yeah. There's a lot of like stories or allegories or meaning that can be read into Gwen's entire storyline. And to me, I feel like I don't know if I want them to just come out and directly say it. Like mm-hmm. as much as I feel like that would be such a defining moment for them to just be like, yeah, and she's trans. You know, I also feel like that would just be what the entire third movie is about. And any and all kind of other meaning that this movie and story is trying to tell would be lost. Mm-hmm. You know, and just because unfortunately we live in a society to where, as we've talked about previously, if there's 3 Black people in a production, all of a sudden it's a Black movie. You know, like, so to me, if they come out and they're like, and she's a trans character, not only does it put like a spotlight on that issue, but like it kind of reduces all of her complexity as a character into just being a trans character. That's how I feel. But mm-hmm. I'm totally open if it would actually mean something to the actual trans community.
That's what I was going to think. Like, I can't really speak for that community, but I would imagine that that community deserves to be celebrated and feel like they have a hero as much as I do when I watch Miles. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you're right in that, like, it's a delicate balance because Gwen is so, she's so incredible and so multifaceted, and you don't want to reduce her to just one label, because I think the whole point of these movies is to celebrate diversity. But there also feels like, you know, if we're going to celebrate some kind of diversity, let's celebrate all kinds. You know, I didn't really read her as trans because of the poster or even the pin, which I did not see the pin on the cops thing. That kind of changes my mind a little bit. But when I saw that Miles had the BLM, I thought they were just trying to orchestrate that this is Gen Z. These are like kids mm-hmm. who are active in politics, and they're, you know, they stand up for what they, you know, these ideas and these principles in a very obvious way. And so I thought that's what was kind of being reflected, but you all brought up fantastic points.
I think I agree with you, Siege, because I would love for them to be like, she's trans. And I would love for us to be able to be like, celebrate it and then move on. But if she is, then like there are people who are really horrible and transphobic, and then they're gonna, that's all that she'll ever be, and they won't let us enjoy the movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's true. So,
I don't know, like I do feel like, A, I don't think that we should create art out of fear, nor should we create art to appeal to the worst of us. I don't think that that's fair. I think that if anything, you should kind of do things to spite them. But I feel like this way of like giving you all of the hints, giving you all the clues and Easter eggs allows you to have it not be the defining trait of this character. We've kind of hit on this a little bit. Who is everyone's favorite spider person?
Hobby Brown. The answer is Hobby Brown. The correct answer is Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Easily.
It is Hobby, but it is also was it Mayday, the Peter B's daughter?
Oh yes.
Adorable.
I love a chaotic good. Like he's just so good. And like I also just love that he was gentle parenting her. Like she was doing all this stuff and just causing mayhem, and he was like, oh, it's fine. I'm also a spider person. I can handle this. Like, I'm not gonna like sit here and reprimand her. She's just a baby with superpowers. Like, she's gonna act out. So I really love her. She was just so cute.
Yeah, Mayday is so adorable. I loved her inclusion. I think My runner up, just for name alone, is the spider dune buggy who is Peter Park's car. And just the pun work on that is so fantastic. I had to give that a shout. But this will probably come as no surprise to anyone who knows me, particularly CJ. But like mine was, my favorite was the Lego version, because I am a huge, huge Lego person. And like when I saw the second time, I saw it with a bunch of friends, and my friend literally like hit my arm when the Lego stuff comes up, because they were just like, oh my God, like Chris, this is so in your wheelhouse. And I just thought that was like such a fun, weird little inclusion, and something that I hadn't caught, but that Kemp Powers, the director, talked about, was like Lego Spider-Man is the only person that Miguel compliments in the entire movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I thought was really fantastic. So.
You're one of our best guys, he says.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like everyone else, he's super critical of. Just the one spider person was the Lego Spider-Man that he liked.
I want to talk about Hobby Brown, because there's a few things about his character that I love. First of all, I love that he is this just punk rock, nonconformist, anti-disestablishmentarianism kind of dude. And they weave that into his character in so many interesting ways. One of which is the fact that if you watch closely, when he goes to visit Miguel, he is stealing in plain sight future technology so that he can build his own time risk. You know, Miles, he asked Miles, why do you want to join Spider Society? He's like, because I want a watch to travel the multiverse. And he's like, why don't you make your own? And then later on, he makes his own. And you kind of notice in the design of it, it reflects Hobby's, you know, paper mache type of animation in the same way that Miguel's time reflects his animation. So I just thought that was really interesting. And the other thing that's cool about him is that, they were so detailed in this. All of the spider people move one frame per second, with the exception of Miles Morales, who moves to every other frame because he's slightly off from the other Spider-Man. But Hobby is such a nonconformist that he moves every three frames. And the fact that they put that detail into there is just the most crazy, insane, like little Easter egg that it's I can amazing. Think of.
They said he goes every three frames, but his guitar moves every four frames, which is great because, again, he's like, I don't believe in consistency. First of all, I love that style. Like, that collage, Sex Pistols is what they call it, like, style that he has going on, I've always been a fan of. So to see that in an animation was just kind of spectacular, and I can't wait to visit more of like that universe. But his character in general was like, they said that they wanted a character that was cooler than Miles, and then not only is he cooler than Miles, but he's effortlessly cool. And then someone I saw pointed out that you expect him, like, when you hear Gwen talk about him, and when you hear Pav talk about him, you expect him to come in and just be like, oh, I'm better than all of you. But instead, he's so welcoming, and he's, like, a fan of Miles, and he supports Miles, and he's the one who teaches Miles how to get out. And I just thought that was a great subversion of the character, to, like, have someone who's not only cooler than Miles, but also supportive and like doesn't see anyone as competition, really.
He's amazing. I mean, aside from that shady comment of, is he bleeding from his armpits?
Yeah, I love
how everyone fucks with Miles for his costume. Everyone just gave, like, Peter B. Parker was like, oh, we'll get you a new costume, it's not a big deal.
They're mad rude about it too.
Well, I think it's funny because, like, you see all of these spider people, so, like, again, like, they clearly have opinions because they've all worked on their own suits.
Did you know that no two spider beings have the same thwip sound from their web shooters?
I didn't know that. No.
Every single being has their own individual sound. It's That's crazy.
Amazing. Oh my God.
It's this crazy. Movie. This movie, I know that it took, what, 4 or 5 years to get together. And when you watch it and you see the detail, you understand why.
It did take 4 or 5 years for them to make this movie. And I thought it was really interesting that the movie is centered upon, like, hey, you can save the world or you can save one person. If you're willing to make a personal sacrifice, you can do what's best for the world. And I was like, oh, this movie was made during the pandemic. That's interesting.
Where it's like you can save one person or you can save several people.
Like, which how much are you willing to sacrifice to help save the world? Like, what individual sacrifices are you willing to make to be a hero? I just thought those were, the fact that this was made all pretty much through the pandemic, I just thought that was an interesting parallel.
Well, it's also funny because Miguel says being Spider-Man is about sacrifice. And I want to talk about Miguel for a moment, because not only does Oscar Isaac do like a fantastic job as a voice actor, but I feel like his spider person, I am personally torn, because I'm like, he has a point. Like, you don't, like, do you allow an entire universe, which is billions of people, to die so you can save one person? Like, what do you do?
You know, you had asked us for criticisms before, and my one criticism about this movie was that from a story structure place, I can't understand why Miguel would tell Miles, like, hey, this is going to happen in 2 days. Because the most Spider-Man thing that Spider-Man could try to do is to try to save everyone at the same time. Like, there's not a single version of Spider-Man where they haven't attempted to do it. So this idea that, one, Miles wouldn't try, or that, two, there wouldn't be sympathy from the other spider people who, you know, have gone through the same thing. I don't know. I didn't find that to be the best. That's probably my one critique I have. But in general, that whole feeling of, hey, you have to put your personal feelings aside and do what's best for the world is also the story of every Spider-Man movie. So,
well, I feel like my reaction to that is, one, we see Miguel be like, well, I'm not going to let you leave. So that's why he didn't have no problem telling him that it happens in 2 days, because I'm not going to let you leave this area. I'm going to confine you, and you're just going to have to wait it out. But also, I feel like for the majority of the spider people that we see, with the exception of Spider-Man India, who, again, is so excited and so happy and so, like, everything works out. What could go wrong for a Spider-Man? Like, nothing bad has happened to him yet. So for him, the idea that, you know, all of these things haven't happened yet with every other spider person, the bad thing has already happened. Like, it's already, like, they've already experienced the death of their uncle or a close person. They've already experienced the death of the captain. And what happens is Miles looks at them and they're like, so this happened to you? And they all are like, yeah, this has already happened to us. So for them, it seems like something that is inevitable. If you meet a group of people and they're like, yeah, this has already happened to us, it just hasn't happened to you yet, then it does feel inevitable. All right, so we talked about your favorite spider people.
We were talking about spider people. I just want to give a quick shout out to, what's his name, Pav?
Yeah, that was what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. That is my favorite. Like, I enjoyed him. I enjoyed his character. I enjoyed his world. His hair. His personality felt like a spider person who nothing wrong had happened to yet. And he's just like, I'm effortless. I don't work out too much because I don't want to get too bulky. My hair just does this. Like, I was just like, I love this guy. And he had the same sense of humor and kind of like awareness as the rest of them. So I enjoyed his world. And I also enjoyed, like, this idea of Mumbatan, I think it is.
Yeah.
I loved that, like, that merging as well. I thought it was really fun.
And here's traffic. And here's traffic. And here's traffic. Traffic. And here's traffic.
I loved it so much. Also, his voice actor lived in India for a while. And after they filmed the movie, like, after, you know, they had done his part, the directors brought him back in because they're like, we don't think this character is culturally relevant enough. Like, we need to go ahead and, like, do some more ideas and throw some more ideas out there. And I love it so much when there's, like, a character that comes in and is like, here's my culture. I'm not going to sit here and explain it to you. It just is what it is.
Yeah, definitely.
It was just so good. Like, I mean, I already knew the chai tea thing was going to happen when he said chai tea. I was like, he's going to call you out on that. And it happened so beautifully. And then when they said, here's where the British stole all of our stuff, I was like, let's keep this going. I loved it so much. Like, no explanation, no nothing. It's just, this is just what it is.
But you know what? I felt the same thing when I saw the Black Lives Matter pin of just like, so the British did it in another universe too. Goddamn. They can't be stopped. Thanos. Interesting about Pav that I thought was interesting. In the beginning, when Spot is stealing the ATM, Miles says, why are you calling it an ATM? The M means machine. And so when Pav says, why are you calling it chai tea? It's just this mirroring that we're seeing, like not only in canon events, but in the actual personalities. Like when Peter B. Parker says to Miguel, like spider people are supposed to be funny. Why aren't you funny? Like that is just like this unique thing that all spider people kind of have. And I just thought it was interesting to see that paralleled in that
Layers of like callbacks, like that's a callback with the movie itself. And anything, but like, there's so many callbacks to like the first one as well. Right. Like the moment where Jeff is like deciding whether he jumps or not, and he like runs down the stairs. Like Miles does the same thing when he's like first trying to decide whether he can jump or not. Or even like when he finally like escapes from Miguel, he does like the shoulder tap, just like he did at the end of the first one. And there's so many more. I'm just not thinking of all of them.
Well, the one that I thought of was at the end when he's tied up to the punching bag. It's very similar to how Peter B. Parker was tied up, and then he told him, he's like, "Hey, you got to watch the hands." And so he's like, "That's being set up."
So I have a question about alternate universe Spider-Man or alternate universe Miles. So like, you know, he's the Prowler. We historically know like the Prowler is a villain. You know, they certainly go out of the way to like allude to the fact that also in that universe, Uncle Aaron's a villain too. Like the way he's like, hey, no, like your family, here's money. We're going to take care of you. He makes a comment about how like the shift change at the bank. Do we think that version of the Prowler, that Miles Prowler, is actually a villain, or do you think he might be able to like be a hero in his own way in that universe?
So I was always told, and I don't know for sure, but I was told that the Prowler isn't a villain. He's an antagonist. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like the Prowler isn't necessarily evil, but he's not good. The Prowler is, for lack of a better word, an opportunist. And that also kind of like answers to why Uncle Aaron was the way that he was. He was able to be like a good uncle, but ultimately working for the bad guys. And that's why I think that there is potential. Like we see in the alternate universe, Miles is Prowler, which only is because he didn't have the opportunity or the exposure to the other Peters. And so like that's my answer to it, is that he's not necessarily a villain. He's an antagonist. And with most antagonists, kind of like, I don't want to say Killmonger, but it's like they have a point and they can be persuaded under the right circumstances. That's
like a poison ivy.
Who's poison not a ivy. Villain?
Yeah,
trying to save the environment.
Okay, but she kills a lot of people. So I love her and I'm with her.
I will say this. I am officially not endorsing murder. However, I would also say that sometimes you gotta prune a few branches if you want the tree to grow. That's all I'm being told. That's all I'm saying.
Like an arch nemesis.
I wanted to talk back about Miguel, and I think that they did a really good job of making this villain or antagonist person who has this mission, who has these morals, and they did it so well. And I'm gonna keep comparing it to Eternals, because Eternals, I don't feel like I really believe that the Eternals were doing anything right when the Celestial came and was like, you stopped a whole another generation of worlds being created. I was like, yeah, that sounds real bad. Like, let Earth go, let it go. Like,
Live here. We're like, why are we doing this? If someone needs to wipe this site clean, do what you need to do, baby.
Do it before my next workshop.
It's a hot mess. Get rid of it. But in this one, it makes more sense because it's his dad, and he has a very close relationship with his dad, and he's had this like trouble trying to, you know, make him proud and try to show him that he actually does care. He just has this thing that he can't tell him. And then Miguel being like, but you could be destroying your whole dimension. It's like that, it makes sense on both sides. I see both sides of the story. Whereas in Eternals, I'm just like, I'm not convinced.
I feel like that's very compelling. And to your point, like any other spider person would try. Like, I think that's one of the things that's interesting to me, is that you see, like, whether it's Gwen or even Jessica, like there's all these spider people who are like, I'm supposed to stop you, but also I kind of would do what you would do. You know what I mean? Like they're all kind of looking, specifically Hobie. One of the things that we kind of brought up Hobie earlier, but if you rewatch the movie and you look at him throughout, he like knows, he knows what no one's willing to tell Miles, which is that you're the anomaly and you have this canon event coming up that hasn't happened yet.
He tells Miles, don't enlist in the war that you don't know what you're signing up for.
Correct. Like that. That's my point. Is he's always kind of looking. To me, Hobie's never really sold on being part of the Spider Society. He's like, I'm going to help this anomaly go as far as he can.
I think he wanted to take it down, and he was kind of waiting to see who he could trust and who would be around to like help him do it. And I think when he saw Gwen and Miles kind of speak up against it, that's when he's like, okay, I'm going to head out. I'm going to set this up for Gwen, because yeah, he doesn't like teams. He doesn't like being a part of a band, but he also doesn't like consistency. So maybe this time he'll like it.
Exactly. Oh, and to that point, to me, I think that Hobie is also a great representation of someone who is wants to take the system down from within, but also knows that like you can't do so and also kind of like fight with them. You have to just be like, I'm out, I quit, you know yeah. Like that grandiosity
of it. Can't put a fire out from inside of the house.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we started on Hamilton,
right?
Well, because that's the thing, I think it's idealistic to want to, and I think that so many people tell themselves, oh, I will get to a position of power, and then once I do, I'll change things. Like, yeah. I think that's like, that's what everyone tells themselves.
And that's why they're revolting against Miles, because he's like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to change it from the get. And I think that's also like a generational conversation that's happening and, you know, in the world right now as well. It's just the new generation being like, no, we don't want to do it that way.
And I think to that point, what's interesting is Captain Stacy, Gwen's dad, also walks away. He's like, this is not going to work. I can't do both. I can't like protect you and be a dad and still be a cop chasing Spider-Woman. And so I'm giving up that to be your dad.
Yeah, I love that.
I will say I was very ticked off when I found out he quit, because I was like, it's that deep. Like, Spider-Man don't even be doing nothing that bad. Yeah.
But if he is going to be a quote unquote good cop, like, I think that this was very interesting. This is a child of a cop movie, but also a vigilante movie. So it is very interesting to be like, you are the system, but you know that the system has limits. You know this. And you always taught me to do things by the book. But what would be the greater good in this situation? And that it's complex. Like, even Jeff, who we see as a good cop and wanting to make really good change, is just like, he's also obsessed with like just doing things by the book and being like, oh, this dude's a criminal. And it's like, yeah, but you're not even really understanding what else is going on here.
And you know, I think that's Jeff's arc in the movie. And you know what? The thing I was trying to think of was my answer to Chris, your question about Miles and alternative Miles, because you know, I really think that that's a story about what happens when you don't have good parenting. Like, the difference between alternative Miles and this Miles is that his dad isn't there, and he's getting guidance solely from his uncle. You know, when you hear Jeff throughout the movie, all he's talking about is how he's trying to be a good dad and he doesn't know if he's doing a good job. And I really want to, you know, how do I reach these kids? Then, like, you know, that kind of like grumpy old man kind of thing. But it is just this like story about wanting to be a good dad, Gwen wanting to be a good dad, and also their kids wanting to be good children for their parents as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think there's just a lot there with Jeff's influence on Miles's life and why he has the outcome that he has.
And then even Peter B. Parker being like, am I good at this?
Yeah.
I love to answer both of you. Alternative Miles goes, oh, your dad's still alive? Interesting. And it's like, you have something that no one else has. No other spider person has both of their parents. Yeah. And it's very interesting to see that Miles does have it and in some ways takes it for granted.
Yeah,
I'm definitely. Giggling because there was a Twitter post when they released the trailer that was like, they don't want to let Miles into the Spider Society because he has two parents.
Exactly. It's a good point. I also wanted to talk about Miles' parents for a little bit, because visually, this is one of the things that I saw upon rewatch. Rio, his mother, is always in red, which is like, you know, like one of the spider colors, red and blue. Jeff is in a blue and purple shirt throughout most of the movie. And there's like this subtlety. We know that without Jeff, Miles becomes the Prowler. While Jeff is there, Miles is Spider-Man. And to me, it's this visual communication that Jeff is, in fact, very important. In fact, the Prowler is from Jeff's bloodline, his uncle, his brother. So there is this like kind of messaging of Jeff being like very important to Miles' Superman journey.
Visually, that's also communicated in the first movie when Miles gets bitten for the first time and he meets Peter A. Parker. He sees that his DNA colors change from purple and green to red and blue. After the spider bite affects his DNA. So it was almost as though he was meant to be the Prowler in this universe had things gone differently.
Again, because it had things gone differently, no matter what, Jeff dies, you know? And because that's a canon event. So I just think that that's very interesting. The last thing I wanted to say, let's talk about spider bite and Hobie. And the reason why I want to bring that up is there's a lot of talk about how Spider-Bite and Hobie knew Miles for like 3.5 seconds. And they see a young black child in trouble. And they're like, you know what? I don't know everything, but I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
100%. I felt that same thing, especially like when I saw that both of them were in Gwen's band at the end. I was just like, oh, okay. They're here for real. They're not messing around.
Yeah.
I love Spider-Bite. I was so glad that she was helping out. I started typing on there. I was like, go girl, you get it.
Because there's that chance where she actually had, like, the computer says, do you want to restart the system while Miles is, like, on his way back home? And she kind of looks at it, and then she looks at Miles, and Miles is just like, please let me go. And again, like, that's just, if it is, that's just black solidarity. We're like, you know what? I'm going to give this black kid a little chance.
Yeah, definitely.
Any other Easter eggs or things that like we haven't discussed that you guys want to talk about? Because this movie is filled with them, but I wanted to see if there were any others that you guys wanted to call out.
The only one that comes to mind, and we were talking about like the color palette, and TC, you brought up how like in the first movie the color is going from green and purple to red and blue. On the second watch, as soon as Miles shows up, and what we ultimately discover is universe 42, right? So the wrong one. When he goes to go into disguise, he's wearing a purple hoodie and a green jacket.
Yeah.
And like, that was like, oh, like it was right there the entire time that those are the colors. And then I realized like that entire universe is like primarily shaded in those two colors.
Yeah.
And then when I thought about what he's like, our Miles is normally wearing, he's wearing like red, white, blue, and black. And it's like, oh, that's not only the colors of Jeff and of his own Spider-Man costume, but also of Peter. And it's like all those influences, like even down to the color palette across the different universes. Like they spent so much time thinking about these things, so much ridiculous amount of time thinking about it. And it's just so exciting to see like creatives who care about this so much. They'll put that level of granular detail into it.
And, you know, from that detail, I know you guys were kind of talking that you felt the length of this movie. I have to say, by the time Miles got to, like, the go-home machine or whatever it was, I forgot I was watching an animated movie. Like, don't get me wrong, it's obvious, but I was just so enwrapped in the story of it that it almost just didn't feel like I could have been watching any blockbuster movie from the 90s, and it would have had that same Jurassic Park type of, like, oh, I'm watching, like, a big event movie right now. It didn't even, like, the animation aspect seemed to disappear after a certain point because the story became so strong. At least, you know, to me, upon watching it, like, even the second or third time, I was like, wow, I'm just getting caught up in this.
Yeah, it sort of transcends the genre and the style.
It also makes No Way Home seem corny as fuck. Sorry to say.
No, it really, really does, though. Like, I was listening to a podcast, shocking, about this movie. And one of the things they talked about is, like, you think about No Way Home, like, yeah, it's so great when the other Spider-Man show up. Like, there's, like, a noticeable pause when Andrew Garfield shows up. Like, they were baking in time for the audience to applaud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you really notice that when you're watching it at home. And I feel like here, they do none of that. They don't have those moments like, oh yeah, like this, it's not built around like, oh my God, this is such a huge moment. We have to talk about this big reveal. It's down to like the detailing that makes it so exciting, not like this surprise that we all already knew about anyways.
And I think that goes back to what Siege was saying earlier about how they made this movie with the thought of people are going to go back and watch it and people are going to stream it, because they didn't think about that when they first filmed No Way Home, because you don't need that pause
No.
to, like, when you're rewatching it.
It's so funny. One of the things I wanted to shout out is there was a TikTok by the user Straw Hat Goofy, which talks
Love Straw
about
Hat Goofy.
Straw Hat Goofy is amazing. He talks about the soundtrack and the
Oh, yeah.
score.
Oh,
And in the very
yes.
end, which is what I'm so excited to talk about, he talks about how, again, we know that this is a story of Miles, and Miles has like his own soundtrack, and then the Prowler has his own soundtrack. And in the last scene that we see, there is a layering of the Prowler and Miles score, because we have both Miles from both universes are layered on top of each other. But then also, we hear when things like get intense, we hear the drums come in. And Gwen is a drummer. And as that starts to amp up, and we see Gwen form her band, we even get a little guitar riff. And that is Hobie, because Hobie plays the guitar. And so it all comes together. And to me, T, as you were saying, anyone who knows anything about musicals is like halfway through a musical. I can't remember what the song is called, but it's basically a song that takes all of the sounds that we've heard from previous songs and it mashes it together.
It's
And it's like,
usually musicals are usually a two act structure, so it's usually the big song is right at the end of the first act, and that's kind of like the big huzzah, and then it goes to intermission, and that's
Defying gravity.
Defying
Nonstop.
gravity,
nonstop,
nonstop for Hamilton. Like, there's just like this song that happens halfway through, and it brings all the elements of all of the music that you've heard so far, and it blends them together, and that's what this does right at the end. And so it really does give credit to what T was talking about, which is like, this is the end of act two. Like, you think it's the end of like this movie, but it's actually the end of act two of the entire story that they're trying to tell. And also like those little details of like showing us Gwen on the drums, showing us Hobie with the guitar, and then having all of those elements come together. I just thought it was like a fantastic way of blending all those things together. Yeah, it's phenomenal.
You know, to your point about the music, I've been listening to the actual soundtrack that Metro Boomin made. It's actually pretty good. Like, I consider the first Spider-Man, the first Spider-Verse soundtrack to be impeccable. Like, I
Oh,
listen
it's
to it all
amazing.
the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, although I don't feel like there were like these standout hits the way that the first one had with like Sunflower or What's Up Danger, like, I'm really enjoying just the vibes of it. Like, it's a very cool, like, I don't know, so rarely do we get this kind of mixture of just all types of culture. And I feel like, you know, when movies have like a dope soundtrack, when they really invest on purposefully making the soundtrack important and weaving it into the movie, those always have the most lasting impact on me as a viewer. Because much like musicals, like, music stays with you. So when you hear that song, you're kind of right back into that world. And I thought that they did a really good job with the soundtrack. Again, no standout songs, but I've still been listening to it nonstop for like a week. You know, one last thing I want to say about this, and, you know, this is kind of my last piece that I had, my last thought. You know, I think it's really interesting that there's been like this push of the multiverse in general in storytelling. At the same time that we are in this age of social media, and if you know, for many, social media kind of acts as this window into the lives of others, and it kind of leads us to kind of flip through Instagram and wonder, like, oh man, if I had made different decisions, would I be, you know, in Tulum right now? Would if I had made different decisions, would I be living this other life right now? And actually seeing these different versions of other lives and seeing these windows, and, you know, if you think about what online friends have become, you know, this idea that you're an outsider in the middle of nowhere, but online you find a community that you can really connect to. It kind of reminds me of Miles feeling like he has no one in the first movie. And then, you know, throughout the first movie, he finally finds this group that he belongs to, this community. But much like an online friendship, in the second movie, we find that like it's not a friendship that he can have interactions with every day. And he wants to belong to that community. He wants to interact with them, but he can only do it if they're while they're in a different universe. And I just thought that there was just something about all of that that just kind of mirrors social media and where we're at with technology now. The fact that like Apple dropped that like Apple Vision thing, and like, you know, they have people coming into your world digitally. Like, it just, there's something happening in society and culture right now when it comes to community. And I think that this movie is touching on that in a very like subtle way, but also in a very impactful way.
Right in the feels.
Yes. And then even once you finally do belong, it's not what you thought it would be.
Exactly. I thought that to me was also really important. The idea that Miles was like, I fought so hard to be a part of this, and it's nothing like what I thought it would be. A, I could only think of Hobie, where Hobie tried to warn you. He was like, yeah, you're fighting to get in this, but do you really know what it is? But then also this idea of we all tend to fight for what we think will be the solution. And then when you get it, you're like, oh, well, this is different from what I thought it would be.
Well, I love that, the theme of this is like, you know, Miles even says to his guidance counselor when she's like, well, what do you want to do? He's like, well, I want to work with people to travel the multiverse. And like, that's what he says he wants to do with his life. So it's just really interesting to have, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, I want to go to college. I want to study this. I want to be this when I grow up. And then you get that job and you're like, oh, this kind of sucks. Like, I kind of want to do my own thing instead. Just, again, very mirrored in Miles' story.
I actually think as we wrap this up, I will ask, what were your favorite jokes? This movie is a funny movie. Were there any like gags or jokes or anything that you guys like really enjoyed that we haven't mentioned yet?
Spider-Cat. Spider-Cat was real cute. Mine was when there's somebody who's like, we got him. There's nowhere else where he can go. And he will go somewhere and they're like, oh, sorry, there was somewhere for him to go.
You know, that is actually Spider Metro Boomin. It's an exact replica of him as a spider person, and it's his voice doing it. It's like his cameo for doing the soundtrack.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That's hilarious. I really did enjoy that joke specifically, Amber. That it was what made me be like, what's your favorite spider joke? Because I just thought that was funny. I also really like the Banksy joke.
Oh yeah.
It's a Banksy. The Banksy joke. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was really good. And then also all the names they call Spot.
Oh, yeah. Those were always great. Because what did Gwen say? Like, what are you, a cow? Move over or something like that. Yeah. Like, you got to do better than that one. I really love how the bagel joke came back into play in such an amazing way. I don't know what's up with bagels and multiverse movies, but that just seems to be a theme. But the way that little side joke paid off, I just thought that was so interesting the way they like weaves it all in. And the fact that he's a spot, like he's a giant, he has holes in him all the time. So the bagel being thrown at him, symbolic because the hole in the bagel.
I think CJ had the same moment here. It was like the whole holes thing.
Yes!
He just kept talking, like, my holes are an opportunity. Like, stop talking about your holes.
And you're making us feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, the infrastructure guys. Yeah, go ahead.
Which is why I said this movie was for the gays. They said, you are queer, you will be seen.
Yeah. My holes are an opportunity. Again, my husband looked over at me. It was like, I just thought that was fantastic. I also want, like, we had talked about a little bit about May Day, but like the idea of Peter B just being like, hold the baby! If you hold the baby,
just hold the damn baby.
Yeah, I just thought, oh, that was really good.
Can I ask one last question to all of you real fast?
Yeah.
But favorite Spider-Man movie?
I need to go back and watch them, but I think right now this one's sitting pretty high for me.
Favorite is Into the Spider-Verse.
Honestly, I think I want to see how this ends. You guys know me. I don't give a straight answer. I think Into the Spider-Verse matched with this are my favorite. I feel like the both of them really do a really good job of everything that I want from like a Spider-Man, a superhero, in a teen movie.
Yeah, I agree with Chris. I think Into the Spider-Verse is my favorite just because there is that, like, you could just watch it as a standalone, and I think it's kind of perfect as is. But this is really close second. You know, there's this bigger conversation happening right now about, like, is this in the realm, like, in the running for, like, the greatest superhero movie of all time or something like that. And, you know, I think it's an interesting conversation because the fact that an animated series at all is beating out Marvel films, like, Marvel, like, they should be embarrassed at how they look handling the multiverse right now. Like it's and I don't even want them to do Miles Morales live, because I just feel like they're gonna ruin it. Like, there's no way you can do it better than Sony has done it. And so it's just interesting that that Sony, this company who I think everyone kind of rolled their eyes at because of the live action movies, because they were all Morbin time, you know, actually put out like masterpieces with this.
Conveys so much with so little and does it so well.
And that's where like animation shines. And like, I would left this movie being like, oh wow, animation could be better than live action. You know, I'm kind of sick of calling CGI movies live action at this point. I want to call them like mixed reality movies or something, because like there's something there's like, we talked about this with Little Mermaid, like your brain has to jump over so much hoops just to kind of like make sense of physically what's happening with gravity in the world, that you can't just be immersive in it. But to be in this world where when Gwen is having a really highly emotional moment, her whole background melts away. It disappears. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's communicating with visuals something that words can't communicate. And that's where animation just really is, like, I think overtakes live action films in terms of what they can do to reach us at the emotional level.
Animation is such a underappreciated art form. And this movie is a love letter to all types of animation.
Well, I just feel like they're really revolutionizing animation in the sense of like, it's made all of us kind of rethink what we expect from animation. I think it's made all of that Disney cow art style seem old fashioned and retro and safe. Yep. Whenever I see trailers for Elemental, I'm like, what are these booger shaped creatures that I'm supposed to care about? Like, I don't give a shit. Like, it's just, it's really hard for me. I'm like, why would I go see that when I can see Spider-Verse again? Like, that's where I'm at right now. Like, I it's just, they are losing this fight for animation in such an obvious way. And, you know, they're in charge of Marvel live action too. So I just feel like they're losing this whole thing.
Anything else from anyone else?
Oh, there was a character that was in the comic books, the spider that was in the wheelchair that distracted Miles a little bit. That's a character, I think that's also a queer character that is also from the comic books, who's because the comic books is kind of going along with this multiverse thing. I think it's actually called like Into the Spider-Verse. So that was a really cool thing to see. I loved it.
That was cool. Do you think people use humor as too much of as like a crutch? Get it? A crutch? And then it hits them in the face?
I get, like, so it was funny. Someone had, like, of course you always get your, like, your critics. And someone was like, oh, I'm so tired of, like, forced diversity. And we're like, no, this is not forced. This is, like, the most natural. This is, every character made sense. The thing about these movies is it takes Stan Lee's words of anyone can be Spider-Man to heart. And it really shows how any person, and does it, like a T-Rex, can be Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's really hard to argue with like the idea of like, oh, there's a black Spider-Man, when there's literally a T-Rex Spider-Man.
The and T-Rex, you know, Spider-Man.
This movie does such a great job of using diversity as a strength. You know, I feel like a lot of times when larger corporations, Disney, when they want to incorporate diversity, sometimes they do it in a very unnatural way. And they do it in a way where it feels forced, it feels unnatural for the audience a lot of the times. You know, not that people are closed-minded, but in that same way that, like, you know, I don't want to see Michael Cera playing Shaft either. So there's just this, you know, this conversation about how to make diverse storytelling versus shoving diversity into like already white spaces, like creating our own spaces. And this movie feels like such an amazing example of the spices that you can throw into the recipe when you're not following along with that Martha Stewart cookbook. Like, this just is really just like so flavorful because of all the diversity it's offered, not just by the animation, but like we said, the music and just the performances, everything.
Well, it literally creates its own space. Like, that's what I think is interesting, is like it just creates its own spaces and it tells its own story. That's kind of like the mark of this. Is it's,
well, that's the mark of Miles Morales. That's the core of who he is.
Correct. I want to thank Amber, aka Sailor Ignite, for joining us again. And Lordifer, Chris Lord, thank you for joining us again for another Spider recap. Tell people where they can find each of you.
Yeah, I'm on the socials on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook as Sailor Ignite.
It's a great name, by the way.
Thank you.
You can find me on all the platforms at Lordifer. Not a great name, but it's a really convenient combination of my last name and my first name. And then if you want to hear more about Spider-Verse, I also produce a podcast called X-Ray Vision, and we did a whole episode on it, including an interview with Ken Powers. It's really fantastic. So go check that out.
I just want to, I've been waiting to say this. Listening to the last episode, you literally say, hopefully I can get hired to talk about this. Like, we are talking on,
Are you fucking
yeah,
serious?
you're like, maybe one day I can
Wow.
get a job where I'm talking about this. And to know that you are a podcast producer now, 5 years later, is actually, it was really
Was
great.
your bagel that you threw that came to life and came fruition.
Beautiful bagel came full circle.
Yeah, there you go. There, that's one. Thank you guys so much. Remember to
Thank
check us
you.
out. Again, this is one of our summer episodes. We have a lot more that we will be doing for you guys later on in the summer. We have merch. Check that out. Go to our YouTube, subscribe, help us with our mission for YouTube, and follow us on all the places at Bruh Meets World. Email us at brumeetsworld@gmail.com. And T, anything else?
No, I just want to encourage people to interact with us and give us their thoughts on across the Spider-Verse. What did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? Give us your hot takes. Is there anything you noticed that we missed? Do you have any fan theories that you want to contribute? We really want to interact with you guys and hear what you have to say.
All right. Thank you guys so much. And as always, dream,
Try
and
and
do
do
good.
good.
Hey, later,
Later, bros.
when the spawn meets world.